The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
Well, the overdose crisis has taken more lives in the last year than at any point previously in BC history, and the numbers spiking for several months during the early stages of the COVID-19 emergency, up to over six deaths a day. More than 1,700 people lost their lives because of a poisoned toxic drug supply. Today, we're talking with another person on the front lines of the war on drugs. Sarah Blythe is one of the co-founders of the overdose prevention site in Vancouver. They just moved to the corner of Columbia and Hastings Street and opened a new location across from Tim Hortons at Tinseltown. But with several major provincial and federal announcements about pilot projects for safe supply and production of drugs, has this yet translated to lives saved on the ground during this second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic? Here's Sarah Blythe. Hi, Sarah. Welcome back to The Pulse.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Yeah, I think we chatted just before the holidays, and a lot has changed for you since then.
Yeah, we moved both our indoor and our outdoor site. The indoor, like, kitty corner to our previous indoor site right on Columbia and Hastings.
Which is right by our station, actually, right at the corner there.
We're neighbors, actually. We're basically, we could walk through our site and then go and walk into where your radio station is, and we're like literally neighbors, and we have a door that we could walk through.
It's true. You know, it's like a one-stop shop for, like, there's the PHS Medical Clinic, there's Overdose Prevention Site, there's Community Media serving the neighborhood, and that corner is such a hub too, so it's a really good location for reaching people and letting people know that things are accessible.
Yeah, absolutely. And even at that, because you're next door, we've been discussing how Ops could have its own little radio show with music and other little things, having folks on from the community to talk about different issues. So
I heard a rumor about this, and I'm very excited. The other location is at Tinseltown. Tell us about that one.
So we have an outdoor location. It's about, now I think it's about three blocks away from our other outdoor location. So it's a little bit, we used to be side by side indoor outdoor, but now we're about three blocks away from each other. So that one's kitty corner to Tim Hortons on Pender and Abbott, right next to Tinseltown McDonald's. And it's in a parking lot. And then we set up a fence with some walls around it. And we've got kind of a really cool little spot for people to come and smoke their drugs so that they're not smoking alone. And that's how people are dying. And a lot of people smoke drugs. We don't necessarily want them to start injecting just so that they can be, you know, in an overdose prevention site. So it's really important to have places that people can smoke or inject, depending on whatever their preference is, but mostly just to get them out of their houses into overdose prevention sites, because even in the time of COVID, people are more likely to die of an overdose than COVID in the downtown east side.
Now, we've been talking about an inhalation site for so long in this neighborhood, and it's something that has been promised over and over again. Once again, you're just doing it.
Yeah, so we have had one for quite a long time now,
mm-hmm.
an outdoor, and actually the outdoor is sort of expanded. You can use, really, you can snort, smoke, inject in it, and it's sort of more COVID friendly under the regulations, because of being outside you're a lot less likely to get COVID being in close quarters with other people. But it's a pretty big site, so there's enough room for people to you know, be around each other and not actually be a risk for each other, and actually take some precautions and learn about the things that are going on. We always have message boards, letting folks know, or, you know, just communicating to the community what we're up against weekly or daily sometimes, you know, whether it be snow or, you know, it's a sort of a safe place to come and talk about drugs and get your drugs tested and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Do you think that people, that the awareness is out there as much as it needs to around the risks of inhalation? I was just reading something even about like vaping oils potentially having fentanyl at some places now.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really seen that come through. Nothing's really surprising. Really what we need is safe supply. But it's also, I mean, I don't know. People don't always understand the risk. You know, that different drugs can be contaminated, like cocaine can be contaminated with fentanyl. And those folks that don't really think that something's going to be at risk and they take the risk without really knowing because they think, oh, smoking's safe or, oh, cocaine's safe or, oh, anything can be contaminated, really, that is a drug that isn't, you know, regulated in some way or another or even tested. And so to be careful, to be really careful and to use not alone ever in this day and age and to make sure that that you're using together or now there's some apps that have sort of been put out there where you can go online, you can go online and dial up to someone who can make sure that if you do have an overdose that someone can be alerted. And so there's different things going on. I mean, I believe that the best thing you can do is use with someone else, stagger your use, go to an overdose prevention site if you have one. If you don't, make sure that you're with someone or that someone can view you. And you know, you're likely to survive that way, as long as there's someone around that can help you.
Yeah, we just had the new stats out last week about the drug poisoning crisis, and it's just, I mean, unsurprising completely if you've been following the numbers last year, but, you know, we hit six deaths a day in the summer or in the late spring after COVID hit. Over 1,700 people died last year, so it's a historic high.
Yeah, no, it's completely terrible. I mean, one thing that is the issue is that you know, when we first started seeing overdose, like 2015, 16, it was sort of contained to Vancouver and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a big thing. And then now it's all across BC. So fentanyl is now one of a more preferred drug and it's, and people are using it. Now there's benzos that are in them too, which is really, you know, it's a really toxic combination of fentanyl and benzos together is a terrible thing. And we're seeing more of that and a dominance of benzos or just, I don't know, whoever's making these drugs, just really, these combinations are very deadly. And it's just a terrible situation. So, you know, the overdose prevention sites, we would prefer safe supply and we have a MySafe machine and people are starting to use, you know, go to doctors and use safe supply, which is really good. We need to make sure that that continues to ramp up because safe drugs, you know what you're taking, you know how much you're taking and you can regulate it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of things that you can do to make drug use safer if that's what you choose to do. So we're just trying to keep on top of what those would be for people.
Could you tell me a bit about your reaction to this sort of federal pilot project announcement of a number, I think four or five projects in BC to look at a safer supply and production of a safer supply?
I think it's great. I think that safe supply is in a lot of ways the answer to the situation that we're in, making sure that people know what they're taking, how much they're taking. Making sure that it actually is the drug that is their drug of choice that they're going to have a safe supply of is a really important thing in the end because, you know, it's, you know, if you give, people who take stimulants aren't going to take, you know, they're not going to take a safe supply of Dilaudids, for example. So, just trying to meet the needs of the people. And really, at the end of the day, you're going to decrease ambulance rides. It's going to be cheaper to do that long term. And it's better and it's safer and kinder. And in the end, I think we're going to be doing a lot better, making sure people get something that's not going to kill them.
And keeping the numbers down of people who like need to be saved by the people at OPS as well. If people know exactly what's in their drugs. I mean, it's conceivable people...
Ideally, overdose prevention sites could become safe supply sites where we can start to get people off of, you know, introduce people that come to our site, you know, some of the sometimes 700 people a day can come to our site and we can say, listen, like, this is your option. We have some options here, how you get on it, make it very simple, make it so that it's as easy as buying drugs on the street and get people using something that's safe, that's not going to kill them. And really, those sites are on the front line. We're talking to people every day. We know who the drug users are in the different communities. They trust us, we can connect with them. And ideally, eventually, you know, we're not dealing with overdoses all the time. Because to be honest, it's just no one wants to continuously save people for years on end and then have more people die. It's just not a good existence. So we're looking for some hope here, and some of these programs are hope for us. So all we can do is hope and I also advocate, because the way that the overdose crisis is, you know, killing people at an alarming rate, but yet COVID is still, you know, taking precedent in every way. And it's, to me, it's not right, but it is the way, you know, it's what we're dealing with. So we have to continuously push. Try to save lives and also advocate and also make changes that we don't have to be just on in an emergency situation.
You mentioned that you would love to be somehow a safe supply site. I know that recently nurses got expanded powers to be part of the safe supply program for prescription analogs, at least, and pharmacists already had that, as well as doctors. Does that kind of open up more avenues potentially for you guys to have someone on site that could also be a point of medical care or attention as well, and referrals?
Yeah. And that sort of building, it's sort of a slow build, hopefully eventually it's just common practice, and that we're doing it at such a large level that it takes over most of the drugs in the streets, and we're not having to deal with the situation we're in, where, you know, to be honest, I'm, you know, go to talk to drug dealers and say, you got to get your drugs tested, and if their drugs are bad, then we just say, you know, listen, like, you're going to kill people here. And dealing with street level stuff, which isn't I'd rather have us dealing with professionals that are giving us something that we know exactly what it is, that they don't need to get it tested because it is what it is. And
how do those conversations go? I mean, that's their income, you know. They're not, you know, it can be kind of a rough crowd,
you know,
at times.
It's just what has to happen. I mean, you know, if someone buys drugs, they overdose, then we have to find the root of the cause, try and get them to test their drugs, make them accountable in the way that we can, right? And in a lot of ways, overdose prevention sites, you can do some of that, talking to drug dealers, making them accountable by testing drugs, and then getting to the root of where they came from and making sure that's not, you know, what people are getting to, you know, to take. So, that's what we're dealing with, really.
In your experience having those conversations, Sarah, would you say that most of the kind of street level dealers are unaware of what's in their stuff, that it's at the production end that this poisoning's happening?
You know, obviously it goes through a lot of production. You know, there's someone at the top who gets the drugs and then is trying to make some money, and then maybe there's another guy that adds some more drugs that's trying to make some extra money, and then there's another guy who adds something else in there and making extra money, and it just goes down this line of drug dealers / assembly, you know, of people trying to make money and that sort of thing, and just putting some extra stuff in there that is really could be toxic. And it's a pretty, so by the time it gets to the downtown east side, it can have been passed many different hands, and different things can be added, and it could be toxic by the time it gets down here. And then we test it, or someone overdoses, or we have several overdoses, and then we sort of say, well, where did you get that drugs from? And then we have to go and find that person and or those people and keep them accountable. Say, like, listen, like, you're going to kill people here, and stop doing that. And you know, that's really the only course of action that we have in that department. And, you know, we've become pretty good at doing that. You know, they have to take their drugs back and find something else sometimes, which may sound completely outrageous or bizarre to some people, but it's just the reality of what we have to deal with, which I don't really want to deal with. And I would rather just deal with having a safe supply where people know what they're taking. We, you know, that they're dealing with nurses that care about them, and that, you know, sometimes there's pig dewormer, sometimes there's all kinds of different things. So if it doesn't kill you, it could cause other long-term issues that cost money and cost, you know, people lives and pain and suffering. Where we don't have to do that. It doesn't have to be that way. And it shouldn't be that way. And it's, you know, to have a crisis go on and on, not only is it, you know, extremely costly for politicians to not do what they're supposed to do because they're afraid of what the public thinks, let alone, you know, without dealing with the actual root of the problem, which could be dealt with by just ramping things up.
With some urgency, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I've always just said, like, you know, we need politicians to be able to say, listen to the public, this is what we're doing. We have to do this. It's urgent. And this is why. And it's going to help us in X, Y, Z ways and be very frank about it. And then just do it.
You're not waiting for government, even though you advocate for government. You're doing what needs to be done. Regardless.
Yeah, we do. We you know, live in this area of what comes up. We deal with whatever comes up as it comes up. And then we try and get that information out to the public as the best that we can. You know, and also to the folks that are using drugs to make sure that they have as much knowledge of the situation of drugs, of, you know, of what they're in. And so that they can have, you know, we know what's in the drugs. We put out announcements, the VCH puts out announcements. And I think a lot of, you know, the bureaucrats are really understanding. They see what is wanted. It's just really the political will to make some of the big decisions on policy changes or by, you know, law changes that make it make a big difference, like decriminalization, those things that we really need the government to make some big changes and be brave enough to do it, in order to save lives and sort of blast through the stigma and everything else and just say, this is the right thing to do. We got to do it. It's going to save lives. It's going to, you know, end this crisis where, you know, we can't have the ambulances going nonstop for 10 years and have more and more people die. It's just unacceptable. And we can't live every night knowing that this is happening. And so, you know, someone's got to be accountable for it, and they've got to do something about it. And there are things to do about it.
Speaking of accountability, I guess at this point, where a lot of us are waiting on the federal government to fully respond to Vancouver's request for an exemption to the Federal Controlled Substances Act. Do you think that the four pilot projects cut it, or do you think that they can actually go more ambitiously on the request?
Well, I think the pilot projects are good, but I do also think that it's got to go across Canada. I've seen some folks from different parts of Canada that are struggling just the same, like in Toronto, and that are pretty, you know, disappointed because they're dealing with their issue over there. And it's just heartbreaking to see, you know, it's great. And I'm very proud of, you know, the mayor and our provincial government for asking for these things. But, you know, I do feel for, you know, different parts of Canada that are, you know, seeing friends and family members lost, and that it should be not, you know, Canada wide, and if we really want to make a huge difference and be a leader across Canada. So But, you know, obviously we're really happy that it happens here, but at the same time, very sad for other cities and that are suffering.
Of course, you are a leader across Canada. I'm sure you've been told this many times. Is there anything about your new space that you're in that you're really excited about that makes it feel different to you?
Well, I really, you know, I'm really proud of the city to, you know, recognize that it is a place that needs to continue to exist. The housing is being built, and then they believe in the work that we're doing, and I do think that we're leaders here, and there is still a lot to be done. But our new place is great. It's clean. We've lived in kind of we took what we could get when we first opened.
It was a little dark though, eh? This place is brighter.
Yeah, it's bright. It's out in the open. You know, we are, you know, a really great neighbor. We always, our main focus is making sure that we're a good neighbor to the people around us and having a small impact and actually improving the neighborhood because of a lot of the stigma that people have around sites. So we always make sure, that we have a positive impact on wherever we go. So, you know, we're really happy to be obviously near in a little bit of a different neighborhood and in a nice clean place that's just been, you know, that was paved and we're making to make it look as nice as we can for people and make it a nice comfortable place that people aren't in an alley and using alone and we work with a little bit and we do as much as we can with it and it really comes down to the volunteers and the people that work at our site that are so thankful to be able to do the work and have a place and to helping people and making a difference and being a leader in Vancouver and across Canada in all of this. So we're really just thankful. But also we want to be, we want to show that, you know, how we can do this in a positive way and help people set up their sites and be a good model that people can follow. So we're very thankful. We're celebrating, I guess, to a certain degree in our new location. Our old location that was indoor, like, was leaky and like there was water pouring through the roof and at times and things like that. So, I mean, now we're in a lot, a cleaner environment. And I feel like, I feel like people feel good about it. And I feel good that we're able to be in a better and cleaner and environment.
Well, I'm really excited to have you guys as a neighbor of Vancouver Co-op Radio right in the corner of Columbia and Hastings, and also potentially to maybe see an OPS show on the station, because that will be very exciting and I will tune in. I know there's a process to go through here, but there's a lot of enthusiasm to have something like this to offer the community.
I know. I think it will be, you know, it won't be it will be like music, probably Trey playing some music and then updates of the Down Honey side and maybe have some folks like even you and other folks on and government officials to talk about, you know, what they think and try and make it as interesting as possible and get the voice of the community out there and interview people from the perspective of the Downtown East side as opposed to just people reporting about it, having people report what they're feeling and thinking and seeing and what they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis so that people can really get an idea of what people, you know, give them a voice for the situation that we're in. And I think that'll be pretty cool.
Well, I look forward to that. Thank you so much, Sarah. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on again.
Okay, take good care, eh? And that was Sarah Bly, the co-founder of Vancouver Overdose Prevention Site. It's now moved to the corner of Hastings and Columbia Street, right in the same building as Co-op Radio and the PHS Clinic. And the other outdoor location where you can do inhalation or injection is across from the Tim Hortons at Tinseltown at Abbott and Pender.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.